We're very pleased to have our MP for this area, Tim Lawton, with us today. He's going to come and tell us a little bit about Christian faith within politics. I said earlier we were not to mention a four-letter word. We're not going to do that. I was worried, though, when I was typing in the names for the badges to find that there were two Nigels present. But it's Davis and Mohammed. So, Tim, please come and share with us.
Good afternoon, everybody. First of all, an apology. I am dripping with sweat, not the terror of addressing you lot, but I've just been chainsawing a bush. And I was conned. In between my street surgery at the farmer's market in Shoreham and coming here this morning, they asked me to go and help with a garden clean-up in North Lancing and to bring my chainsaw, which I did. And it was a very difficult tree to get out. So with 10 minutes to spare, I'm dripping wet and looking completely dishevelled. I hope there's no photographers in the room. But anyway, I'm delighted to be here. Thank you very much for inviting me, John. I just think this is a really good initiative. And we don't, as our last speaker has just said, we're very bad at communicating as men. And I think events like this are really helpful and positive, and we need more of them. Now, John asked me to talk about the strange subject of Christian faith in the political world. Well, many people out there will think that all politicians and politics generally is the most ungodly profession or activity you could be involved in. So how on earth are you going to fill up 5-10 minutes talking about that? But contrary to some perceptions that the media would like to peddle, the Palace of Westminster is actually quite a godly place. Not only do we have a functioning chapel and a chaplain, but all the main parties, my own party, the Conservatives, we have the Conservative Christian Fellowship, Labour Party, Liberal Democrats have something similar. For all I know, UKIP might as well, but we won't go there. But the mainstream parties certainly have very well attended and well supported religious groups of all faiths, as well as Christian faiths, who have some serious input into policy making, which I think is really important. Also, a place there are weekly talks on various community issues, which we can all go along and participate in. And actually, it's a really good place to take time out and share your thoughts with other people. So, politics has got a Christian side, despite what the press might say. And faith to me is important. I mean, I had it thrust upon me. My father is now a retired vicar. I was brought up in a rectory in Lewes. My father's job was, I think, quite similar to an MP's job. He was almost a sort of fourth emergency service. He was constantly called on in the community to go and give comfort to somebody who'd just suffered a bereavement, to talk to couples on the verge of breakdown, to bring couples together about marriage, to talk people through confirmation, was everywhere in the community. I know John is the same here. That is the job of clergy, for which they are greatly underappreciated. Not as underappreciated as politicians, but that's another matter. But we are the source of great cynicism. But I do think having faith for politicians is probably even more important now, that we can be seen to have convictions and base our decisions, the way we vote, often quite controversially, anchored in our beliefs, at a time when politicians are too easily written off as just being there to say whatever the PR spin doctors want us to say and whatever is going to garner the greater amount of votes. So I think it's very interesting, somebody came up to me in the farmer's market this morning and said to me, I'm a member of the Labour Party and I've never voted Conservative, but I just want to say I think you're a really good constituent MP. And if UKIP's a threat to you, I might actually vote for you, which was rather nice. My job as a constituency MP is to look after everyone. And by everyone, I mean everyone in my constituency. I have 74,500 voters in my constituency, but I also have about 16,000 kids. Now, whether you are 8 or 88, and we have quite a few 88-year-olds in this constituency as well, I am their MP. I hold special children's surges, and I think it's absolutely right, regardless of age, certainly regardless of political affiliations, a Member of Parliament is here for everybody. And that's why I do street surgeries every farmer's market in Shoreham. Next Saturday, every third Saturday at the Lancing Children's Centre, Worthing Town Centre, and so on. I also, as a politician, and it's the right thing to do, spend a disproportionate amount of my time in the most deprived areas of my constituency, where most of the problems are. So if people say to me, well, we haven't seen you around much, I usually say, well, that's good. It means you haven't got any problems, isn't it? And I learnt an interesting lesson a few years ago. Some of you may know I did a Channel 4 television programme where four MPs were sent to some fairly challenging tower block estates, in my case in the middle of Newtown in Birmingham, dumped in it for 8 days, and sofa surfed, slept on floors, not knowing where we were going to sleep from one night to the next. And in one particular, I stayed 2 nights on the 9th floor of a tower block with a young couple, a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old child who had some quite serious behavioural problems, 2 ex-fighting pit bull terriers, a really ghastly cat and 2 goldfish in a 1-bedroom flat on the 9th floor of a tower block where there were drug dealers on the stairs and constant fires. In fact, this family had been burnt out of their flat and only just recently gone back there. And it was an interesting experience. And I won't say who it was, but the MP for that area had been the MP since 1983. And I went round saying to everybody, who's your MP? Why aren't you doing something about this? Nobody knew who their MP was. And so I took a group of them to an internet cafe, and we looked at... I didn't know who the MP was, because I wasn't told where I was going. They took away my wallet, they took away my mobile phone, they gave me a ticket at Euston Station, took me to Birmingham, gave me an address, and I had to find out my own way from there. So we found out who the MP was, and they all said, oh, no, she's not our MP. We've never seen her around here. We know who she is, but she's not our MP. And she'd been the MP since 1983. Now, what struck me about that community was if any community needed to be connected to people in positions of power, councillors, MPs and others, who could do something to help them with the manifest problems on one of the most deprived estates in this country, where we came across some drug dealers who were shooting each other on the estate outside the block, where 10-year-old kids were running drugs for them, then it's estates like that. But they were completely disengaged. The turnout figures at the local election, I think, were lower than 50%. So why, in estates where they most need to be engaged, were they the most cynical and the most out of touch with local politicians who could actually just have done something to help them in those extreme conditions? And I think that is a real lesson for us. And we've got to re-engage people in the political process. And they have to have faith in politicians. And one of the interesting ways of trying to reach out to some of those people, and I spent some time with gangs in Birmingham. I went out in a hoodie, I own 6 hoodies, undercover, meeting some members of the gang. And it was a really interesting program they made out of it. And I made contact with those gangs through a Christian charity called Young Disciples. And in particular, one young man in his early 30s, Jason, who had been a member of one of those gangs. And in Birmingham, they have postcode warfare between gangs. If you come from the wrong postcode, you are a target for another gang from another area purely on the basis of your postcode. And people may think the inanities of why we go to conflict in the Middle East. But to go to conflict to the extent of people being knifed and shot because of their postcode area, is there anything more absurd than that? And that's what we're facing in some of our inner cities. I met some of these people through Jason. Jason had been in a gang. He'd been involved in drugs. He'd had members of his gang, his friends and family, knifed and killed. He had a couple of young children. He'd gone to jail, being involved in drugs. He came out of jail and something hit him that said, do I really need to live my life like this? Is there a better way of living my life? Is this what I want my son to inherit when he's my age? And Jason got involved with this Young Disciples Christian charity. They do a fantastic job. They have music studios, they get sports events, and they bring gang members in from the cold. The way you do that is not by politicians telling you shouldn't be doing that, you should be there. Or even by professional agencies and some do-gooder going along and saying, now we've got a great project you can do. It's by people who speak the language of those who have been in those gangs because they've been there themselves. And often they are faith-based charities. And they are the people we should be supporting, be it dealing with crime, with drugs, addiction, alcohol, whatever it is. And that's why I'm such a big fan of faith-based charities in particular who do this really important work. That was in Birmingham. We have some really good organisations locally. We have Electric Storm Youth, which I'm proud to be patron of here, which is doing a great job running youth services and trying to resurrect an old school into a youth base for some of our disaffected young people around here. We have the Messy Church doing some really good work, engaging ordinary families and showing them how they can have a good time. We've had it in Sompting, we've had it in Lancing. And we also have children's charities, faith-based children's charities, the Children's Society, doing some amazing work with the victims of child sexual exploitation, which is a big problem which I, in my time as children's minister, was very involved with. And then abroad, I've just come back early in the summer from a trip to Jordan with Tear Fund, a Christian charity, which is doing some amazing work with some really appalling victims from Syria who are in the largest refugee camp in the world, in Zatira on the border of Syria, just inside Jordan. So I'm a big fan, in my politics, of not relying on professionals, not relying on politicians, but giving the tools and the recognition, the resources, to often faith-based organisations who have an empathy and a drive and a passion and understanding of how to deal with some of the problems of everyday life. Just finally, just some of the other guiding principles for me as a politician. We have quite a lot of ethical issues which we have to deal with, and it's a really probably the most difficult part of my job. We can all say we're in favour of these educational reforms or against these educational reforms. We can go by the whip or whatever our party says, but there are conscience issues which absolutely it is the right thing. It must come down to individual members of Parliament as representatives of the people of this country to make their own decisions on. It may be on genetic engineering. We've had recently a vote on mitochondrial donation, which is all about cell treatment and how we can help those people who will inherit a genetic disease, which will inevitably result in early death for children. I actually, for one of the first times on an issue like that, voted in favour of it, because I don't think it is genetic engineering in that case. I don't think it affects the personality. It's not about designer babies, as I would certainly vote against. And God gave us scientists. And in that case, God gave us some very clever scientists at Newcastle University who found a way of tackling a fatal disease. It's a difficult decision. Many people took exactly the opposite view. Many of my constituents wrote to me saying I should take a different view. Euthanasia is another area which is deeply difficult, and I've taken the view that we should not play God. It's usually a good principle. Politicians and everybody at large shouldn't try to play God. And although it's a difficult case, and I have personal experience, euthanasia is usually not the way we should be going. Because do we want to create a culture where people feel it's incumbent upon them to take their own lives effectively and book into dignitas if they are becoming older and infirmed? So it's not just about, you know, the rights and wrongs of somebody who wants to take their own life. Are we creating pressure on them that they feel that they're no longer useful members of society? We are all equal in society. And then contentious, very contentious issues like same-sex marriage, where many people took the opposite view to me. I voted against it because I believe that marriage is a Christian institution between a man and a woman. I'm a big fan of civil partnerships, and it was absolutely right that people of the same-sex relationships should be recognised and protected within the law. Marriage, in my view, personal view, is a religious institution between opposite sex couples. I got a lot of flack for that. I got a lot of support for that as well. But I hope, in my job as a politician, I gave a good account of myself, of why I believe what I did, and that's the way that I voted. And I think that's what we need to expect from our politicians. You won't agree with us all of the time, or even most of the time, but politicians should be there to explain and justify their reasons for doing things and to be as transparent as possible. Just finally, another area of my Christian faith which I hold dear is belief in the family. And it can be quite unfashionable to defend the family. I heard a story the other day of a four-parent child, effectively the result of a sperm donor impregnating a surrogate mother, and then the child was adopted by two lesbian parents. another sperm donor who's responsible for more than 600 children within the same area. Is that going to lead to people who from the same father unknowingly link up later in life and form a relationship? Children, a Canadian child called Storm, whose gender was kept from him or her by his or her parents on the basis that the parents wanted the child to choose their own gender, not to be forced into being a boy or a girl. This is wrong. And there are enough challenges and pressures on children growing up in today's world without that sort of social engineering experiment placed upon them by trendy parents and trendy organisations in some misguided, politically correct equality cause. And so I think, as a politician, we have a duty to stand up for families and say what we think is wrong and is right. Families take many different forms. We have many single parents, not single parents through their own choice, doing a fantastic job in difficult circumstances. We now have same-sex couples who are adopting, doing a great job helping to rehabilitate kids who've been through really traumatic experiences with their own parents. But statistically, it is undeniable at the end of the day that a child has the best chance of a good childhood and the best chance of stability if he or she is brought up by married parents. Whether you agree with it or not, it is a fact that you are, as a 16-year-old, more likely to have a television set in your bedroom than to have a father living at home. And if your parents are still both at home living with you by the time you've reached the age of 16, there is a 97% chance that they are married. And fewer than 1 in 10 married couples will break up by the time a child reaches the age of 5, but it's 1 in 3 cohabiting couples who will break up at the same stage. And not all people will have the luxury and the pleasure and joy and commitment of being able to be in a stable married relationship. But the most important thing to me is giving those children the very best chance in life, giving them a stable childhood, and statistically and evidentially that is best provided by married couples. And the cost of family breakdown in this country is £48 billion a year. But the social cost on those children, the mental health pressures, they're more likely not to do well at school, they're more likely to get in trouble with the law, they're more likely not to get into a successful career and so on, that is best served by being brought up by both parents. Now, where that's not possible, where fathers, for whatever reason, are not living with their children, and conferences like this need to assert this, it doesn't mean that they should not be involved in their children's lives. It means even more they need to be involved in their children's lives, and we should do everything we can to make sure they have that opportunity to be involved in their children's lives. And that's why we've changed the law to recognise shared parenting. And I have too many tales of fathers who've been frozen out of their children's lives because they've split up with their partner and the partners use the children as pawns to freeze that parent out. And parental alienation, I think, is a very worrying form of child abuse that we have. President Obama, who said that what makes a man isn't conceiving a child, it's having the courage to raise one. And I think that's absolutely right. So faith is important to me. I think it's important for people to stand up for what they believe is right. It may not be fashionable. It may not be politically correct. I often hope it isn't politically correct. It may not be electorally popular. But if it's the right thing to do, then we should do it. And faith, above all, teaches me and teaches all of us the difference between what is right and what is wrong. And we should not be afraid to assert that. And faith gives us the strength to do it, and certainly faith should give politicians the strength to stand up and justify what they believe to be right. Thank you very much.